It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
My name is Dave Hanratty, and there will be no encore. Welcome to the show. We're recording on Valentine's night, but of course it will be out before or after then, I should say. The concept of time is something I struggle with, and I think I'm also a bit frazzled because we're sitting here in the studio, myself and Sonic Architect Adam.
Hello, happy Valentine's Day to you, dear listener, and to you, Dave.
Thanks. As a single man, I greatly appreciate it. And I'm also here with the most handsome man in the world, in fairness. I'm very lucky.
Whoa.
It is. Returning to the show.
Sonic Architect Adam.
For the first time since our Enemies episode last summer, it is Mark O'Brien, a.k.a. Royal Yellow, a.k.a. One Quarter of Enemies. Hello.
Hello, Dave. Hello, Adam. Great to be back.
Yeah, I'm frazzled for all those reasons, but also because, so we got headphones now when we record, which we didn't used to, which is, you know, I don't know what that says about us, but like, it's high-tech city these days, and we just heard a little sting there. We heard the first, like, 30 seconds of Stains, It's Been a While. And let me tell you, I don't know if recorded music has ever sounded better.
The fidelity.
Am I wrong? It sounded incredible.
Amazing. Best Valentine's Day I've ever had.
Don't know if it already was 4DX or if it was just the sound of one troubadour's trauma. It was fucking beautiful. I loved it.
It had been a while as well for me.
It had actually been a while for me as well.
It always has.
Well, listen, welcome to the Love Zone. Here we are on this episode here. We're going to do top five Simpsons songs.
Yes.
I shot down your other idea, which was?
The other idea was Sexy Songs Part 2. I think myself and Craig originally did Sexy Songs probably one, like yeah. during lockdown, yeah. a couple of years ago.
It was during lockdown, yeah. Yeah, I remember
it was a sexy
it was
time.
It was a very sexy time. Yeah, love lockdown.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, and I did best, he did worst. And it was over Zoom, so there was a lot of like
tension.
Yeah, a lot of like avoiding eye contact down the webcam lens as I played like
your laptop fan was going, I believe, if I recall.
It was. Yeah. That's not all it was going.
There was someone hoovering, I think, as well.
I tell you, that fan was hot and bothered, so it was.
That
was a different time. Every time we've recorded with you outside of a studio, there's been some kind of sonic interference.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's why I really like coming in here, because Adam is an actual pro yeah. producer, whereas
you're like an X-Man whose power is that you're just haunted by
noise.
Yeah,
yeah, noise or yeah, yeah. But yeah, we did Sexy Songs, and that was interesting. Just playing like five of my horniest tracks for Craig Fitzpatrick in the depths of lockdown down through a screen.
I mean, there are many people out there who would love to be able to have that moment with Craig Fitzpatrick in the depths of lockdown, okay? Like, I'll tell you that. But Adam, could you actually play what I think is the sexiest song of all time?
I think I'm going to have to now, haven't I?
It's been a while since I could hold my head up high, and it's been a while since I've heard
I mean, he's just like, he's just so tortured, you know? Like, there's nothing like. Shut up, those fucking drums, man. Okay, listen, let's get on with the show.
That's the sound of a man, like, sort of rebounding, like, with a woman he doesn't want to be with at all.
Yeah.
Because he's coming off the tracks after a genuinely beautiful relationship.
That's very
he's
specific.
He's got beer in hand.
Yeah.
He's, like, walking out of a strip club. He's just.
Sure.
At the ground. I don't know. It is, but it's hot. Sexy.
He's got the Confederate flag wrapped around his wrist or something.
Yeah.
Okay, listen, before we get to the news, and there's lots to talk about, Dave and Adam, it says here, I wrote these notes. Dave and Adam went, brackets, separately to the sad wrestling movie. We're talking about The Iron Claw. If you don't know what this film is, here's a little snippet from the trailer, just about 20-odd seconds.
Ever since I was a child, people said my family was cursed. Mom tried to protect us with God. Pop tried to protect us with wrestling. He said if we were the toughest, the strongest, nothing had ever hurt us. I believed him.
Yeah, that's the Iron Claw. Spoilers for the Iron Claw, if you're not aware of the true life story of the Von Erich family. We're going to talk about this really, really quickly. And like, there is a musical tie-in, I will say. There's lots of good Neil drops, but there's an amazing original song written for this film. It's called Live That Way Forever. It's by Richard Reed Parry of Arcade Fire and Little Scream, and it's incredible. But real quick, I went to see the film at the weekend. I was very hyped about it. Mm-hmm. And despite knowing, like, I think some people are going to go into this movie and be like, oh, it's a wrestling movie, cool. And they're going to be confronted with a lot of very sad things happening. There was a moment towards the end of the film when I cried so hard in the cinema, I thought my chest was going to cave in.
Whoa.
So there you go. Adam, how'd you get on?
It goes there, does it?
Oh, it goes there.
Oh, it goes there, yeah.
You know, do you know anything about this? Like,
the trailer suggested, I can't believe you cut the trailer. Was that Don't Fear the Reaper?
It was Don't Fear the Reaper,
the first note of Don't Fear the Reaper came in there. And then
we don't want to get a legal writ by Blue Oyster Cult.
What I can tell from the trailer is that someone is in the closet. Is that a part of it?
Incorrect.
Oh, okay, right. All right, Adam, over to you. Yeah.
I thought it was fantastic. Like, to kind of quote my own Letterboxd review, it's so bleak.
It really is.
It's like so bleak.
Oh. Here's how bleak it is without giving anything away again for anyone who hasn't seen it, right? It's so bleak that they cut down the real life element of it, not added to it. Now, there is some kind of, you know, fudging of stuff here and there. But, for example, it's about a family of wrestlers, family of brothers. They left out an entire brother because, as the director said, the story couldn't withstand another tragedy, basically. Spoilers.
Oh, wow. Because it kind of looks like a romp and stomp and good time from the trailer in a way. Like,
it's got, obviously, like, there's a bit levity, of but it's also just, it's a lot. And I thought it was great. I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was very, very strong. Performances are excellent.
Zac Efron in particular was fantastic.
He is brilliant.
I think he probably got a lot of stick before now for like not having a whole lot of serious roles, but I think he's really like put paid to that now in terms of that performance, because wow, like I was blown away.
He's really good. And again, like, you know, there's nothing like, I cried several times, and it was like, it's that thing of like, do you ever see that film Warrior, the MMA movie with Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton? It's very, very good, but it's a real like tough man's weepy, you know, like it's like like lads very much like being like, oh, for fuck's sake, a lot of that in the cinema. But I will say real quick, I mean, I want to talk about cinema etiquette for a second on this music podcast.
Here because we go.
When I went to see The Iron Claw, now granted it was Saturday, it was a Cineplex type situation. Cinema Tech, if you will.
Cinema Tech, of course.
Adam's favorite.
Give it its proper title. Thank you very much.
There were some teenage boys in front of us on the way in, and during the trailers, they were like looking at TikTok or Instagram or something, but they had the volume up full blast.
No.
And I'm like, it's during the trailer. So I was like, okay, listen, this is hardly ideal.
No.
But it's Saturday afternoon in a Cinema Tech, and you have to take what you can get. Thankfully, they didn't do that during the movie, and they actually kept their talking to each other to a minimum and to a low roar. And the thing I'm surprised, they were on their phones quite a bit, which I obviously think is horrendous, and you should be shot dead by firing a squad for doing this. But to my genuine surprise, they whacked the glare down to the smallest possible. Yeah, I actually was stunned. I was like, wow, okay. I mean, like, this, it's not ideal, but that's the best I'm going to get. Yeah. And by comparison, I was sitting like way in the back middle, right? Someone in the third row, when they took their phone out, to look for something, and they were on it for about a full minute. And I swear to God, man, it was like this person pulled a fucking floodlight out of their
eyes.
It was unbelievable. I was just like, what is wrong with people? And it's not just the youth, I shall say, because I went to see a film last night called Perfect Days. It's the new Wim Wenders film. It's really beautiful. It's set in Tokyo. It's out on the 23rd, I think, so I'd highly recommend people go check it out. But it's like slow cinema, and it's, you know, the lead character doesn't say a lot of dialogue at all. Like, he's just this older gentleman who is a toilet cleaner in Tokyo, and it's about his, like, daily routines and, I guess, you know, the kind of the mundanity of it all. And he, there's some great needle drops because he listens to cassette tapes, you know, in his car.
Legend.
First needle drop.
I can hear it now. The
Lots of that. The whirring of
And he listens to exclusively, like, 60s music and stuff. So the first needle drop in the movie is, and I sat there with a giant smile on my face, it's House of the Rising Sun by The Animals.
Fantastic.
I was like, oh, here we go, baby.
Yeah.
My God, you could fill an extra vision with the amount of films that that song is in.
Probably, yeah. It's Casino.
And every one of them is great.
Perfect Days. Yeah. But it's a really good movie. But, again, on the etiquette side of things, right, I swear to God, it was a preview screening as well, so I guess you don't know, you know, are the freaks going to come out? And I thought I was safe, you know, because I was in a much more respected art house cinematheque for this. there was an older gentleman a couple of seats away, right? And I swear to Christ, this guy felt the need to provide a running commentary for the entire film.
Oh, you're fucking kidding
me. And he was, and like this man, like I say, older gentleman, you know, somehow, despite his many years on this earth, has not mastered the complex art of whispering.
Yeah, and this sounds like my father.
It had the vibe of a man who thought he was in the front room of his house. He's wearing an overcoat. His hand appeared to be surgically attached to a fucking bag of Rolos or something. He had a handkerchief.
As it should, in fairness.
He had a handkerchief, and boy, was he going for it when he wasn't opening his fucking mouth. And it was just like...
Rolos make me awful phlegmy.
Pointing at the screen. He kept pointing at the screen like he was Rick Dalton in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And he was just like, you know, oh, he's like, what's she going to do? And I was and I actually was like, four times throughout the film, like under my breath, I went like, shut the fuck up. I was just like, because I was stuck. I was like, there's nowhere I could go, you know, because I was sitting in a seat where I was in the middle. It was two seats to, you know, empty. I couldn't just jump into the one to my right. Then I'm sitting beside some random guy who's like, what the fuck are you doing? halfway through the film. But I was this close. I was like, I just don't understand what has happened to people. Maybe it's always been this way.
You see the influence of Zara Larsson from 2023.
I did think
you?
About that, yeah, because she was all like, we should be able to talk and frolic and have a fucking Dionysian
character analysis
and fucking Dionysian bacchanal in the cinema as opposed to just sitting there and watching the film. But he literally was like saying stuff like, he was like the guy gets a beer at one stage and he goes, oh, beer. And I was like, oh. And I was just like, what the fuck? And like, and then he's like, what's going on here then? And I was like, why don't you watch the film and see what happened? And I was kind of like, you know, again, like you might be thinking, Dave, was this man all there? And I looked over a few times to be like, maybe, like, because maybe there's some issues here and, you know, you can't.
Yeah.
He seemed just your bog standard Irish da.
Yeah.
Who
it
refused.
Probably was my da, to be honest.
Refused. Well, could you have a word with them, please? You know?
Yeah. He just gets very excited.
I just couldn't. I was like, I have to put up with this for 2 hours.
Yeah. It's hard.
Great film, though. Go see it. Preferably in an audience that understand that shutting the fuck up is how it should be.
You know, in India, the culture of cinemas is like, is total opposite, where like it's, you know, the cinema
it's
is...
It's a show, is it? Yeah.
The cinema is like almost like a pub for us.
Okay.
And like, people go and like they bring like their whole family and like, you know, 8 kids and like,
is this why the films are all like 3 hours long on average?
Yeah, and full of songs and stuff, so you're probably not missing a lot of dialogue, but there just needs to be like, I don't know, it's like this, it's the same when you're at a gig, or it's the same when you're on like a busy road or even in a busy supermarket. Like when you get that many people in one place, everyone has their own rules.
Yeah. I've always had, like, this is my theory. Like, you know, I've always said, like, you know, you put enough people in a room and there's going to be a problem. And it goes back to that quote that I love, which is, you know, all of man's problems stem from his inability to sit quietly in a room by himself, which is absolutely the case. And I'm just like, man, like, I'm sorry, but like, please don't do this.
I know.
There are worse problems in the world, many of them, but I'm just like, for the love of God, could you just shut...
This is my
trap.
The front door.
I think you're a bit like me, and Adam, you're probably
it's not
a bit like this
gig,
too. Like,
do you know what I mean? Like, if it was a stained gig, I'd understand. Like, we'd all be, but sorry, go on.
Just in that, like, I think I can speak for all three of us in here that when I say that, like, the cinema is like a sanctuary. Like, it's where we go. Like, I often go to the cinema when I'm feeling really, really down, because it's like a safe little place where I can just sit in the dark for 2 hours. I can go on my own, and it'll just like, It'll fully immerse me in something that will take me out of whatever
is bothering me
that way. You're like, I'm depressed. So, it's time to watch The Zone of Interest.
Sometimes it is. Yeah. And so it feels like someone is just like getting you at the worst possible time. Like you're like, buddy, yeah. I need this, you know? And like, I find myself booking like the latest possible showing of films now and going at weird times.
Weekday just because, afternoons are the one. I'm telling you, if you're off on a weekday afternoon, preferably like an early screening, that's the best one to go to because there'll be very few people there and generally, you know, they'll shut up probably. Yeah. But yeah, listen, that's enough about movies, I suppose. I just despair. I think it's getting worse.
I genuinely think that it could be to the week last year we had this exact same conversation.
No, but can I just say, from my point of view, right, this isn't old man sheds cloud. This is old man talks too fucking much in the cinema. Now, can we have the news sting, please? We'll talk about some music, shall we?
Start spreading the news.
And my vow to not talk about Taylor Swift anymore on this music podcast fails yet again because she won the Super Bowl. Congratulations to her and her alone on her rampant victory over the San Francisco 49ers last Sunday. Apparently the most watched Super Bowl ever and the most watched broadcast in US history apart from the moon landing.
Wow.
Sorry. What?
Yeah, that's the thing. The Nielsen ratings that went in, like in America, said the most watched broadcast in US TV history since the moon landing in 1969. 123.4 million people watched Taylor Swift's Kansas City Chiefs beat the San Francisco 49ers in what I heard wasn't a great game.
Wow.
So listen, that's that.
Isn't
right?
How much sport do they actually play? Like I heard some students talking about this on campus the other day when I was just wandering around.
When
I just wandered around the campus, because that's what I do. No, I was teaching and I could overhear some of my students talking about the Super Bowl. And they said something like that there's, you know, if you actually add it all up, there's only like 25 minutes of actual gameplay.
Actual gameplay,
that wouldn't surprise
me.
I set up to watch it 1 year and I was like, the amount of times it stops is comical.
It's so stop-start. And every time it stops, ad break.
Ad break.
Every America. Single time. Yeah, capitalism.
But they're like the best ads ever though, aren't they? Like there's like one-off.
They have like special trailers that come out and, you know, this, that, and the other.
They're tailored all specifically for
tailored, you say.
Oh, good night, everybody.
Everything I can remember. Fucked up. Well, whatever the rest of that line goes. I saw Stained live, by the way, in the Point Theater in 2001. It was incredible. I had a great time.
Was Stained one of the first records you bought?
I paid 23 Irish pounds on US import from HMV. I think it's no longer on Grafton Street. Not one of the first, but yeah, kind of like when I was in the mood, you know, when I was
amazing.
Finding myself. It was called Break the Cycle.
I remember.
Yeah.
Did you pay 23 Irish pounds for...
Not for Stained, but I definitely spent an equal amount of money on equally garbage records of the time, like Puddle of Mud's Come Clean.
I had that as well, yeah.
With little babies... arse on the cover.
That's weird. Like, don't worry.
They got the Nirvana thing so wrong.
The lyrical content was so much better, though, wasn't it? You know, like, you know?
Yeah.
I love the way you look at me. Yeah. I love the way you smack my ass. I love the dirty thing you do.
Oh, man. So, anyway,
the song called Control, by the way.
Are we done talking about Taylor Swift?
We are, but the Super Bowl, I do want to mention because a couple of things. Did you see Michael Caine's tweets about the Super Bowl?
No.
You know, legendary actor Michael Caine.
Yeah, Michael Caine.
Still with us.
Michael Caine.
Yeah. I'm not going to do Michael Caine. We'll just sound like Bane. Bane.
They're in the same movie.
Bane Caine.
Bane's the scariest man I've ever seen, Mr. Wayne.
Awesome.
I mean, that was a first timer.
I was born in the dark.
You really adopted
it. Michael Caine.
I made a promise to you.
I was born in the dark.
To your family. That fucking movie, by the way, is one of the funniest films ever made. Dark Knight Rises. Like, everyone gets a soliloquy in that movie. Mm. Everyone's on the heath. They all have their big fucking speech, and it's just, I failed you, Master Wayne. Like, it's ridiculous.
I love seeing Michael Caine cry.
It's very funny.
He's so good at it.
It's so great when he has that thing early on when he like comes up with the most specific scenario of all time when he's like,
I imagine seeing you somewhere in Florence with a Fernand Branca. And I'm like, oh gosh, I wonder, might that come back in 2.5 hours? Anyway,
the eating the tangerine thing. Have
tangerine,
you seen,
yeah,
have you seen
that video? I've seen all the edits. Yeah, yeah.
Tangerine. Tangerine.
As big as a tangerine. A diamond as big as a tangerine.
I saw a ruby. The size. All right, listen, let's stop this. Let's stop this.
Yeah, by the way, it's patreon.com/encore if you want to help support this manic show. And you can get the episode a day early, by the way. Maybe you're listening to it now on the Thursday, and maybe you're like on the Friday going, oh, I could add this.
Must
I could
cancel this that subscription.
Michael Caine thinks it's good enough. Patreon.com/newencore for more of this.
So anyway, Taylor Swift and Michael Caine.
You can message us directly about how much you just hated this segment. Michael Caine is a big Twitter guy, apparently, which surprises me. He says weird shit. Like, I mean, like, there's one of him recently where, like, he just tweets out, like, literally, here's a tweet from him, and it just says, chilled weekend. That's it. That's the entire tweet. Good night, you prince. And then give peace a chance. They're three separate tweets from one evening. But on the night of the Super Bowl, he put up, in the space of like about half an hour, he just literally put a tweet that just said Super Bowl in Las Vegas. Like, that's just all it says.
Was it on in Las Vegas?
It was,
yeah. Okay, you got it right at least.
A standalone tweet that just says Super Bowl in Las Vegas. And then there's another tweet sent 2 minutes later that says, we'll stay up all night to see Super Bowl.
He thinks he's texting his son. He doesn't realize he's tweeting.
And then 11 minutes later, there's a tweet that says, love Las Vegas, got married there. Great man.
Amazing.
An incredible human being. Adam, you want to talk about the halftime show, do you?
Yeah. So,
but no one cared about.
No, it was like, I was so, it was kind of mid overall, I thought. I spoke about it on Flop Culture's Patreon with Fionnuala J.
Don't you plug other Patreons. We're trying to grow our own.
Yeah, well, listen, people can have more than one subscription is what I say. Mm-hmm. But
In this economy?
Choose wisely,
yeah,
everybody.
So I was saying that, like, I didn't really understand it. And also, Usher sings for about 20% of the fucking performance. Have you watched it?
That's right, guys. Usher was the halftime entertainment, not Taylor Swift.
Current artist.
I didn't watch a second of it. I guess he was so not interested in his own halftime show that he got married immediately afterwards. Congratulations to him and his new wife.
That I didn't know. But what I also didn't understand, like, what a lot of the spectacles and stuff were. And then there's the big band, like, you know, the like marching band, like doing the songs, like a little bit of it. And there was like such a fucking chasm between, in terms of contrast, between the like the two sounds, the sounds of like the bits that they've left in from the track and then the band doing the thing. I was like, that's just too much, and I don't like that sound anyway.
Yeah,
but what I didn't realize, I was like, why the fuck has he got Ludacris, Lil Jon, well obviously Ludacris and Lil Jon for but he's also got Jermaine Dupri there, who's there for the guts of 5 seconds, and who imposes himself on the entire Super Bowl performance. Of course, it's Will.i.am. I can't get away from him. This guy haunts me. He appears in so many Formula One grid walks. It's absolutely insane.
That, like, man travels.
Yeah.
Gets around.
He's like, where is there going to be TV camera today? Okay.
Yeah.
A charter a flight immediately.
Yeah.
He's got the one remaining Concorde jet in existence.
He's got that boom, boom, pow. Yeah. You know? That's how it works.
Oh my God. But yeah, it was kind of up and down. The spectacle is great. Like, if you like the spectacle of the Super Bowl, it's glitz, it's glamour, it's pure entertainment.
I hate it so much.
But if you
it's Vegas, baby.
If you're there looking for pure artistic vocal performance, you're not going to find it.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Alicia Keys, was she on
Pitchy.
It with him? Pitchy. Wow.
I was expecting a lot, because like her reveal was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was like this giant, like flowing red piece of like material, and it was just like absolutely incredible. And she's on the piano, and it started off really good, and then just
Alicia off key.
Not great, yeah.
I think it's gas that how non-current that lineup is. Like, it's the Super Bowl 2024. And that is a lineup of artists that were knocking around when I was 10.
Defrosted from Cold Storage. Like,
yeah. Yeah. That's insane. Like, have we just stagnated so much as a culture that you can't, you know?
So I found it after, and this is like the final point I'll make on it. And the one thing that I found in the end after doing some reading is that the whole kind of back half of the performance is a bit of an homage to Atlanta and the Atlanta artists that...
This is in Las Vegas.
Usher's from Atlanta. I don't know. So like that, the kind of tied back to that, and that's why he brought all of these people who
okay,
are
okay. So Atlanta hasn't had relevant. Atlanta hasn't had a breakthrough artist since.
I know. Like this is what you're up against. But wow. It did make more sense to me after that. I was like, okay, now I understand why they're all there. But
yeah.
Okay. Overall, like a solid 4 out of 10. Like.
To so like something of a surprise wedding for Usher, perhaps, you know, taking inspiration from Michael Caine's tweet there, but also a week of surprise drops. Adam, did you write this opening line?
I did.
Do you want to read it out?
Yeah, I said it's been a week of surprise-ish drops. I said the soul fire of Beyoncé is back.
Reference to Dan Aykroyd on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, and listeners of the show will know from the quiz episodes that you know there's a little context there.
Must do another quiz soon.
So she's back with Texas Hold'em and 16 Carriages in like an odd country folk vibe, ahead of her forthcoming album Act Two. Due to land on March 29th.
Another Beyonce album, another Taylor Swift album. It never stops. But speaking of new albums, anyone listen to Kanye West teaming up with Ty Dolla $ign for Vultures 1? I turned it off halfway through.
Yeah, I think I got about a quarter of the way through it.
I'm ashamed to admit that I listened to the whole thing.
Purely
because I wanted to like just see what it like if there was any quality in it.
Hoping for a bit of redemption. Like
spoilers, spoiler alert, there is no quality in it at all. It's dusty demos, vocals recording on an iPhone. Half of those verses weren't cleared. He's using an uncleared sample from Ozzy Osbourne, like that. Ozzy Osbourne came out and said, I want nothing to do with this man. This is an uncleared sample. Mm-hmm. Like opening himself to, you know, court proceedings. He clearly is in need of a payday because this is absolute trash. Ty Dolla $ign should be ashamed of himself. Mm-hmm. Kanye should be ashamed of himself.
There's a sample from Kevin Smith's Dogma, which I was
is
like...
Is that the...
Yeah, it's the one that you're thinking of.
But naked big booty bitches don't just fall out of the sky or something like that.
You're not too far off. Yeah. Which would be fine in and of itself if it was just the vocal dialogue, but then Kanye just keeps saying it over and over again.
Again and again.
I was like, the melody in that song is all right. And then like the Ty Dolla $ign bit is okay. And I'm like, there was kind of a song here maybe. But I listened to it on the way to meet someone for coffee, and I was like, okay, well, I'm going to pause it now for this coffee. And then I was like, well, I'm not going back to the album later on. I was just like, there's nothing in this.
Yeah.
It's gone. And in terms of other new music this week as well, just real quick, Health, my beloved Health, put out a cover of Deftones, Be Quiet and Drive Far Away. It's fucking great. And Pearl Jam came back into the world with a new song called Dark Matter off the album of the same name, which is coming out pretty soon. I think it's April. But they also announced an Irish gig, Pearl Jam, right? They're playing Marley Park, the worst possible venue, in June, which is turning into an insane month for gigs over here. I've never seen Pearl Jam live, ever, which is bizarre to me because I was obsessed with them when I was a teenager. And I was like, fuck, Marley Park. I was like, all right, whatever. And then it was like, Richard Ashcroft and the Murder Capital are on support. And I'm like, well, that's not enticing either. Do you know how much the tickets are?
I can guess.
For this show?
I'll let Mark guess first.
Pearl Jam.
Is Richard Ashcroft the guy from The Verve?
Yes. Yeah.
And the Murder Capital.
Pearl Jam, Marley Park, June 22nd.
I'm
going
to say 100 euros.
Adam?
Yeah, 108 euro, I reckon.
Before fees, 117 euro.
Wow.
Fucking ridiculous.
I will say Fall Out Boy, Green Day and Weezer was over 100 quid and I thought that was daylight robbery.
That's three bands though.
Yeah, but I'm like, the fact that ticket prices are that high
it's
just obscene.
It's a joke. Listen, you could have bought a ticket if you want to go see Roisin Murphy when she played two nights in the Olympia last weekend. You say, oh no, but you want to talk about this.
I meant to say when I got here, I really don't want to talk about this, but
well, I've said it.
Here we are.
Well, let's have a quick chat about it.
The Roisin Corner.
Craig and I discussed the Roisin Murphy situation last year on the end of year episode, but she was kind of back in the news this week in as much as she played two sold-out shows in the Olympia. She did an interview with the Irish Times, which she read.
Ed Power in the ticket.
You have an excerpt there on your phone, don't you? You sent it to me.
I do, yeah. Do you have it there? I'll queue it up, actually, because I think I only have like a small bit of it.
You sent me a very eloquent voice note about this, and I was like, do you want to talk about it on the show? So, there's a part here in the interview she did. I think it was with Ed Power.
And
it was like, you know, for anyone who's coming to this late, Roisin Murphy made comments, trans people are upset. She kind of doubled down on it to a degree. And
just wiped her hands of it and just disappeared.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of
in a really kind of meek and
unapologetic
stale fashion.
Say,
it was like very fucking.
And again, for the record, I don't want Roisin Murphy to be fucking imprisoned or anything. I just think that she could have handled it a lot better. And I think, you know, her follow up was made it worse in my opinion. It was there was lack of clarity and a lack of apology, or at least like, hey guys, I love you. None of that. She was asked about it in this piece because, you know, you have to. So it comes up in the conversation, and it's like, did she worry that after the dust settled, she might not have a career? And she says, mate, are you really going to ask endless questions about this? She says, we had said that we would need to ask about the controversy, but didn't intend to dwell on it. She said, I have a whole career to talk about, not just 5 minutes last year. I 100% don't want to talk about it. I mean,
1,100%. Oh, no, sorry. No, that's an I. Yeah. I 100%.
I will say the font threw me for just a second, but I got through it. Mark, however, was tricked
1,100% don't want to talk about it. Yeah, and it's worth mentioning that, like, we had said that we would need to talk about this is like an editor's note from Ed Power being like,
yeah,
we had agreed prior to the interview that we would need to speak about this.
Yeah, you would have said, listen, I want to talk about X, Y, Z, and like, while we're at it, blah, blah, blah. And look, listen, she's within her rights to, like, you know, like, you're in an interview situation, like, the interviewee doesn't owe you anything. You want to get quotes out of them, absolutely. But, like, I'm like,
sure.
You know, fair play to him for asking about it. But then, of course, the conversation moves on to just more general stuff.
Yeah.
What did you, like, yeah, what is it about this that you...
I find it really upsetting because I have been a huge Roisin Murphy fan for a very long time, like ever since, like, going back as far as Moloko. And, you know, I just thought that, like, when that unfortunate, like, Facebook comment came out last year, where she was saying, you know, something like puberty blockers for kids are fucked or something like that. That was, like, the initial sentiment that kind of kickstarted this whole debate. And obviously, you know, a lot of Roisin Murphy's audience are LGBTQI plus people who, you know, she's very consciously marketed herself towards that demographic for a very long time. That is her, like, core fan base. And so to come out then and say, like, look, I'm sorry, you're sorry kind of thing, or like, I'm just expressing a legitimate concern. And really kind of like doubling down on like, I'm not open to having a conversation about this. I'm not open to having my mind changed about this. I'm not open to discussing this. I just believe, like, to say that, like, a huge aspect of trans culture is fucked, and then to not enter into the conversation that you started.
I'm now running away from the conversation that I myself
is just
created.
It just seems so stubborn and arrogant to me. And then to kind of downplay how much of that demographic actually makes up her audience and her fan base. You know, and to be like, well, I make music for everyone. And, you know, it just felt like she was really, like, kicking her fans and not offering any real explanation. And then to do a media press tour in the way that she's doing now and to be doing interviews and to be refusing to talk about it again, like, there's an opportunity here for, like, I think such a healthy conversation, because I think that a lot of the opinions that she has, unfortunately, are opinions that a lot of people have with regards to, you know, with regards to the trans issue. And I feel like through conversation, there's going to be a lot more light shone on this and like, we'll all benefit from that conversation. But she's not open to it at all, it seems. She wants to just wash her hands of it completely. And it's just really disappointing. Because now she's got this entire new fan base who are, you know, joining her in a sort of a sense of martyrdom and sort of, you know,
the mum's standing net crew her. Kind of thing.
The mum's out crew.
The mum's net crew. You know, yeah, the one where, like, kind of Glinner ended up going to.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's people on Twitter, you know, who are like, I've never been to a gig before, but I'll be at yours kind of thing.
And I'll buy,
like,
this record and I'll have five of them, please. I will say, the only thing I'll dispute there slightly is just, I know we're talking casually, but, like, you know, the use of the word entire, like, you know, because it's not, like, you know, there are lots of people who are still supporting Roisin Murphy.
Yes.
You know, Two Nights in Olympia would attest to that, et cetera. And for some people, they just won't care about this whatsoever. I'm just curious, like, how do we feel about people who, you know, like do you think, you know, do we need to make a stand here? Like, should she be boycotted, et cetera? Because even, like, it's a whole different thing, by the way, but Arcade Fire are playing Funeral in full next, or this year in Dublin, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I saw Another Nine put up a post about this, and he was kind of saying, like, you know, will you go? And, you know, mm-hmm. when Arcade Fire played last time, Wynn Butler had been accused in weeks prior of numerous instances of sexual misconduct. And Craig and I talked about it in depth. If you want to go back to those older episodes, just search for Around the Time When the Arcade Fire Gigs Happened and the corresponding No Encore episodes, because we talked about it. We were recording the night in one of the gigs, and then we talked about it the week later, and I'd actually interviewed Wynn Butler in the weeks prior myself, obviously not knowing any of what would come out via the Pitchfork investigation. But Craig and I had a very kind of, I think, fulsome back and forth about that and about, you know, moral responsibility or lack thereof, and is it okay to go, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, I mean, Roisin Murphy, like, would you have a problem, you know, if one of your friends is like, I'm going to Roisin Murphy tomorrow, would you be like, or like, let people do what they want, you know, like where do, you know, what,
no, I guess
what is the action or inaction to follow here? Because, like I say, I don't want, you know, like, I don't want Roisin Murphy to be turned into a hate figure. I disagree with what she said, and I wish that she had more reserve to come back the second time and say, oh, no, listen, come here, you know, obviously I've no problem with trans people, and if anything, I love them. But there was none of that, and there was no even, and by the way, you know, really sorry if I hurt a lot of people there. And then, yeah, to kind of go the other way, like, you know, it's like, that's the side I'm on, but I also don't want to demonize her necessarily. I just think I think it's disappointing.
It's disappointing, and therefore you can only really bring your own personal, you can only really have your own personal standards with it, I think. And like, you know, I just don't think I could. It's interesting because it just reveals, like, it's not even so much what she said, it's just what it reveals about her as a person. There's so many other layers to it, because it reveals that she's able to just like dismiss a huge amount of her fan base instantly.
And
that
people, and like a societal people in general, you
and
know,
people
like
in general, that she's able to just like, that she feels she's above, that she feels that she is above like having to analyze or critically contextualize things that she says. And no, none of us are above that. If we say things that offend people, we have a fucking duty to like interrogate those things and talk about those things and converse with each other as human beings. And so it reveals a lot. And I think, look, I'm not going to, like, I'm sure I'm not going to yuck someone else's yum. Like, I'm sure there's people I know who are going to go see her in the Olympia. And like, I know people who went to that Arcade Fire gig. You know, like, it is what it is. Sometimes people's connection to the music is just so deep. Maybe they fucking, you know, maybe they got married to this art, to one of this artist's songs, or maybe it helped them through a really dark depression, or through a sickness or whatever. Like, I don't know. Like, at the end of the day, everyone do what you want. Personally, I have a hard time. I have a hard time separating it, and I don't think I could enjoy a Roisin Murphy gig. It just hangs there. This will just hang there in the air for a long time for me. It's more heightened with me. I have a trans sister, like one of my siblings is transgender, and I have a very deep connection to, you know, trans issues because of it being directly linked to my family. And, you know, for me, it's just like, it's hard to, you know, it'd be hard to just go and have a bop. You know what I mean? It's unfortunate, but you know.
Yeah.
It is what it is. I don't want her to have her career destroyed, you know, because it emboldens people as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
If you...
Because people will come at you and be like, oh, you won't be fucking happy until she's, you know, like...
Exactly.
On the street. It's like, no, that's not what people want.
It's not what I want, no.
You want a reasonable situation. Like it's
absolutely.
Like, that's all you're asking for, really, you know?
But the problem is that, like, J.K. Rowling's and the, you know...
Aforementioned... Let's not say his fucking name, you know?
But they'll say that, like... You know, no apology will ever be enough. And that, like, these keyboard warriors will only be happy when you're lying in the gutter covered in your own piss and blood. And
there
puke.
Are some people. There you are know? Some people. Like, I will, again, like, there is that other, like, side of it as well, where, like, there is an element of when people apologize for something, the apology tends to be round two. You know, it's like, let's jump on the apology. And it can be anything from something trivial, something this. And don't get me wrong, I thought Roisin Murphy's second her second statement on the matter at the time wasn't great, but like, at all. And some people kind of met with criticism, but some people did. Like it's, you're going to find extreme people, even on the side of the angels, like, who are just like, they're like, I find that in the Notes app era of apologies, that's always red rag toable, I find, for the most part. But that's also just social media and people not understanding how to, like, you know, it's like, we're in this room right now, I think, you know, we're having a conversation. You're not going to fucking charge at somebody, like, in this way, but online, for some reason, it's much more. And like I say, you know, I don't want to cross my wires here, but it's just like, I think the whole thing lacks a certain level of humanity, ironically enough. And yeah, it's, that's why, like, there definitely would be some people out there who would want Roisin Murphy to be out of a job forever. But, like, again,
yeah,
I think, as is so often the case in so many things, the truth is usually somewhere in the fucking middle. And sorry, not to jump. Yeah. I just find that there are, like, you know, sometimes I see people where I'm like, okay, calm down. I'm like, this person is trying.
Yeah.
I think Roisin Murphy did fuck up. And this new interview was a chance to maybe, you know, actually broaden it out or something. But instead she was like, no, I'll give you a couple of lines and then move on.
If I could make one recommendation for something that's related... I would recommend everyone go listen to The Witch Trials of J.K. Rowling, which is an amazing podcast that was created by one of the women who actually left the Westboro Baptist Church years ago. And it's a series of, like, long interviews with J.K. Rowling, but also with people from the trans community, with people, you know, from the Harry Potter superfan community who became, like, really, you know, disappointed and jaded. And it's a really, really extensive and well-rounded kind of documentary series. Podcast documentary series, and it it was so illuminating to me. It shined so much light on sort of both sides of the argument. And like, I came away from it feeling like I understood everything better. And I just think that the way that Megan Phelps-Roper deals with it, she's the one who hosts the whole thing, is stunning. It's like such, it's such good journalism, you know, because because she shows through that show that like the whole sharpening your pitchfork thing only serves to embolden the person on the other side of it and sort of make them further, you know, further cast them away from their fan base or from ordinary people. And then it just becomes impossible to resolve, which is kind of what happened there. And I don't want to see that happen with Roisin Murphy or with anyone, you know?
Yeah, totally fair. Listen, let's talk about something a lot less, you know, kind of hot button issue, a lot less, you know, contentious. Brian May of Queen, right? You know, I saw this, I thought this was fucking hilarious. So, because Brian May, right? Everyone has this image of Brian May as this, you know, big haired, you know, nice man who loves hedgehogs and stuff. You know, I contend that Brian May, right, is an absolute prick. And here's why.
Speaking of sharpening your pitchfork,
because he's got a massive ego. This is the guy. This is the guy, Bill. This is the guy.
This guy right here.
This is the guy who, when he wanted the Queen film to, like, he wanted Freddie Mercury to die halfway through the Queen movie, and the second half of the movie is Queen just getting on with it.
Going from strength to strength.
Being a success.
Yeah.
So, which I think is absolutely hilarious. The reason I mentioned him is because this week he was talking to Total Guitar, and he said he never liked the mix of Under Pressure, Queen's smash hit with David Bowie,
mm-hmm.
which is a wonderful song, by the way.
Amazing tune.
Just incredible.
Yeah.
And its usage in the film Gross Point Blank is amazing. And its usage, of course, in the recent film After Sun mm-hmm. is also mm-hmm. absolutely devastating.
Yeah.
Basically, Brian May said that the original version of it sounded massively chord-driven, but that much of its heavy guitar was lost following David Bowie's input on the final mix. Gosh, mm-hmm. I wonder what Brian May's problem is here as the guitarist of Queen. Mm-hmm. May said that Under Pressure was the result of spontaneous late nights in the studio, with the initial cut featuring a pretty heavy backing track. At first, Brian May said he was, quote, beaming over the heavier guitar because it reminded him of The Who. He raised that comparison to David Bowie, who said, it's not going to sound like The Who by the time I've finished with it. Brian May said, Bowie didn't want it to be that way.
It's going
to
sound like The Who's Brian May.
Nice. Brian May said the change were made because we all had different ideas of how it should be mixed, specifically naming Bowie and Queen frontman Freddie Mercury. Two men who can't answer for themselves, by the way, can't fight back mm-hmm. at this character assassination that's happening.
Yeah, I love how he's waited, like, what, 30, 40 years to say this? Oh yeah, great job, Brian May.
He says, basically, it was Freddie and David fighting out in the studio with the mix, and what happened in the mix was that most of that heavy guitar was lost. He went on to reveal that he originally played the main riff of Under Pressure on electric guitar, but it was replaced by the acoustic bits, which were done as a sort of a demo. And he goes, I never liked it, to be honest.
Well, who cares? So many other people do. That's one of my fucking favourite songs of all time.
Go listen to We Will Rock You then, Brian May.
Yeah, or like join The Who. Well, join a fucking startup, a cover band. Who cares?
Well, he says, I do recognise that it works. It's a point of view. It's done very well. People love it. But he goes in live shows now. He said he performs Under Pressure quite a bit different to the released version, leaning into its more guitar-heavy origins. Cool. It's a lot heavier, and I think it benefits from it, he said. Now, this is my favourite bit. Looking back on the process, May said, it's probably the only time in my career that I bowed out because I knew it was going to be a fight. David was an awesome creative force, but you can't have too many awesome creative forces in the same room. It starts to get very difficult.
Love how he subtly referred to himself as a fucking awesome creative force.
On the same level as the David Bowie and Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, the subtext is in all caps there. Like, it's fucking unbelievable.
I'm sure they were so gutted when he bowed out. Like, it was probably like an hour and a half before they even noticed he had left the room.
The human equivalent of can I get more me, basically, yeah, you know?
Look, I get it. He has a version that he likes, but you know, the version that is out there is so perfect.
It's perfect.
I haven't heard Brian May's Guitar Hero version. I don't want to. I don't need to. It's a perfect song. Just accept it, yeah. Brian May.
Deal with it.
It's great. And look, if you're throwing a bit of extra axe in for the live version, like, of course you are, because you haven't got David Bowie and Freddie Mercury on stage. You need to fill up that space somehow. So shred away,
you got
Mr.
Adam
May.
Lambert there. Listen, okay, real quick on the classic rock front as well. What did Bohemian FC do this week, Adam?
They announced a football jersey collaboration with Thin Lizzy. The Bows are back in town, Dave.
Nice. Yes. Very nice.
That's
Adam.
One of my favourite headlines I've ever written. It's very good.
I've got a good one coming up after this, but that is a good one.
Yeah, it's so it's a new collaboration between Bohemians and Thin Lizzy in the latest, it's the latest in a string of music related collaborations. They've obviously famously done the Bob Marley collaboration, and they in recent years have done one with Fontaine's DC as well. The jersey features is designed by Jim Fitzpatrick from the Black Rose album Inner Sleeve, lyrics from The Boys Are Back in Town, and an embroidered hem tag of an original concept poster for the gig in the lower front side.
10% of profits from sales are to be given to Music Generation.
Yeah, which is, yes. Like, to be fair to Bose, they always seem to, you know, their heart's always in the right place with things like these, it seems.
Definitely.
To, you know,
definitely.
There's always a nice cause, yeah, to the side.
You get like a Thin Lizzy logo, it looks cool. The jersey's gorgeous. The
jersey's fantastic.
White with purple
very
trim.
Very nice, yeah.
Lovely. Really, really nice. Yeah.
I've never owned a football jersey in my life, but I was.
Now's the time. Music Generation helps bring music to disadvantaged areas and isolated communities by means of education and workshops, it says here.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
Also where I work.
Yes. Which, by the way, was
and
actually.
Last week's guest, Kieran McGuinness, as well.
Genuinely, these are all happy accidents. Yeah. We're not being sponsored by anybody. How are you finding working with Music Generation?
It's lovely. It's like probably the nicest job I've ever had in terms of like how just the good feeling that you get from teaching music to kids who like otherwise wouldn't have access to it. They have a real appreciation for it, and they're often coming from, you know, in some cases, like we work with migrant centers and things like that. So like they're coming from really tough backgrounds, you know. And yeah, it's really like, it sounds so cheesy, but it really has like made me sort of fall in love with the power of music again. It's just lovely. And I get to be a big kid as well. And like, I get to sort of reconnect with like the part of myself that was a dumb, silly teenager, you know, learning Green Day songs and Led Zeppelin songs. Cause it's amazing. They like, the kids still want to learn all the stuff that I wanted to learn. This is like, you know,
just
like,
make sure that Under Pressure stays the same, yeah, way. Okay.
Yeah,
let's not encourage some kind
of
fucking
next week's lecture,
some like, big league Brian May nonsense. Yeah, you know, yeah, I don't, yeah, want that happening.
No, we turned the guitar off on that one. But yeah, it's a really lovely job. It's a great organization, Music Generation forever.
Excellent, man. I mentioned Adam did a great headline there. The Bows are back in town.
Thank you very much.
But Adam, my headline for this next story.
Let's go for it then.
Let him cook. Bad Bunny reveals alternative career path.
And what was that alternative career path, Dave?
Culinary arts.
Fantastic.
Bad Bunny, the absolute megastar from Puerto Rico.
WWE superstar, yeah.
Legend. Yeah. He said, I saw cooking as something creative because, sure, there are recipes, but there's also the opportunity to craft your own dishes, to create your own flavor. Always had his heart on creating music since he was young, but did say that if that didn't work out, he had another dream, and that was to get in the kitchen. You know? Who knows?
I think, like,
who knows what we could have had.
Credit to him. Like, it's fantastic. I love it personally myself. So I can see where.
You love cooking.
I love cooking. Yeah, really do. So I can see where it, you know, comes from.
Are
it's
you
great.
Good cook?
Are you good? And you can be creative.
Are you, are you like a nobody beats him in the kitchen kind of guy?
No, I wouldn't say that now. I can hold my own and I can, you know, I feel like I can be quite experimental and, you know, I can take some risks, but sometimes they don't pay off. So
yeah, I'm not a. I don't know how to cook really. Basics. You
no.
Know? Yeah, and it's not really like, you know, it's depressing, but you know, that's just, you know.
Yeah,
that's my sad admission on Valentine's Day.
You can love it or hate
make
it,
a dinner on Valentine's Day, like Tan and Felix.
What's your take on it, Mark?
I've never heard Bad Bunny, but I do like
you're
cooking.
You're missing out.
Bad Bunny thumbs down, like, cooking thumbs up.
Listen, yeah, that's all I that, that's,
haven't listened to Bad Bunny.
That's all
do
I need
enjoy
to hear.
Cooking food.
That's all I need to hear. Lastly, in the news section, I was going to mention that the Libertines had a bit of an enjoyable moment when they were filming something and playing pool, and somebody played them a Simpsons AI song, yes, of Don't Look Back in the Sun, and they were like, what the fuck is that? But this is just an excuse to cue into the top five and actually play a bit of the AI Simpsons thing, a bit of a phenomenon that emerged late last year when someone has used Homer Simpson's voice to do popular songs. And I hate the AI thing, especially in this kind of instance, but this, I think this is my kryptonite. This is the one I actually think is okay. Mm-hmm. So let's have Homer Simpson, shall we, sing a classic song from the year 2006.
Far away, this ship has taken me
Like, why is it so sad? Like, it's solemn and it's melancholic and beautiful. And also, like, he's really going for it. And also, like, I would say, like, his not a million miles off Liam Gallagher with his yeah,
it's so good.
There
it's
gorgeous. There's a bit of a British inflection coming through at times there.
British invasion.
But, like, as we will talk about a lot in this top five.
Yes, it's top five Simpsons songs, everybody. It's what it says on the tin. Yeah. Songs that have appeared in The Simpsons. All original creations from my end. Maybe you've picked a contemporary that they worked with, but, you know, I'm going for songs originated within the show's parameter, you know?
I've got some parodies.
Okay, that's fine.
A lot of their songs are parodies of, like,
yeah, the top five, as you should know if you listen to the show regularly. If you don't, maybe you're brand new, maybe you saw Simpsons, maybe, you know, I don't know. You could be anybody. You're very welcome, by the way. And it is, of course, patreon.com/newencore if you want to throw a fiver to us and you can get the episode a day early and just generally support this independent show that could. The Simpsons is, of course, a popular animated show that began life on the Tracy Ullman show back in the day and has been going for many, 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 many years. In fact, it's still going. I think, like most of us, we probably all tapped out around season 10, 11, or 12, or even before then. Apparently it's come back to form, but I don't know if I'll ever find that out. It's still going. It's still a going concern, but, you know, the popular, I guess, consensus is that it had a golden run for quite some time. Mm-hmm. That's certainly where I've picked my songs from. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, do you love The Simpsons? Do you love their musical stylings?
I adore it. I absolutely adore it. Making this top five has been such a nice way of reconnecting with my love for those first, you know, maybe eight or seasons. Mm. Yeah, it's, I think it formed, like, I think it formed 90% of my sense of humor. I think, like, I learned to love from The Simpsons. Like, it's a show, like, it has so much heart.
It really does.
Even these five songs I picked tonight, like, there's moments in them that make the hair stand up on the back of my neck and, like, genuinely give me, like, a little lump in my throat every time I hear them. Like, it has, I guess as a little preamble to, like, before we get into the music on it, like, but that specifically talks about the music. It was Alf Clausen who did the vast majority, pretty much all of the music right up until a couple of years ago when he was fired. he's a genius. And he actually did the theme song for Alf, which is interesting because his name is Alf. Alf was the show he worked on before The Simpsons.
What does Alf stand for, everybody? Remember Alf?
Alien life force?
Alien life form.
Oh,
so close. Can't give you the points.
So basically he was like a gigging sort of like composer working in TV in the late 80s. Alf was cancelled or came to an end. He decided he didn't want to work in TV anymore. He wanted to go off and do films. And if he was going to work in TV, he wanted to do like serious dramas. Someone put him in touch with Matt Groening and the guys from The Simpsons. He took the meeting even though he had like no interest in it, but he was like, he hadn't worked in like 7 months and he was kind of desperate. They were like, do you want to do this animated series? He said, no, I have no interest in doing a comedy. I have no interest in doing an animated series. And they were saying, well, we want it to sort of have the look of a comedy and, you know, but we want the music to be dramatic. We want the storylines and the music to be heavily inspired by drama. And I think that kind of perfectly sums up The Simpsons because it's one of the funniest shows ever made, but the storylines are beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know, there's, like, I'm sure you can think of innumerable episodes where
Homer looking at the stars after his mother goes away.
That's the first one that
fucking destroys me. And like Homer, like, again, when you're a kid, Bart Simpson's the coolest thing of all time. Mm-hmm. Homer's funny, but that's about it. When you get older, you realize the pathos of Homer's unbelievable. And I've always said he's my favorite character in anything ever, any work of fiction, anything, because he's a bad husband, he's a bad father, he's a bad friend, he's a bad employee, but you never want to see harm come to him ever.
Yes.
You just want to hug the guy. He's
incredible. He has no badness in him.
There's no malice. Yeah. Like, I mean, like, it, which I think along the way, the more the show went on, maybe they kind of dropped that ball by accident. Mm. But yeah, he's innocent.
Yes.
And he's just like, he's dumb. But he has his moments, such a big heart. Like, it's just like he really is. And he's so vulnerable. And even little things that you see, like every now and then someone's like, you know, oh my God, like someone did like a montage of like Homer and his little reading glasses.
Yeah.
It's just the cutest thing. He does like all these things and it's just, oh my God, like it's just so, he's childlike. He's just, he's amazing. Mm. It's those episodes are the ones that absolutely stay with you. Absolutely. Cause you just like, you're just like, please, like, you know, I want it to be okay for him.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like so the Maggie innocent. Reveal, you know, do it for her, all that kind of stuff. You're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful.
It's the best. I'm doing this top five has made me want to go and watch it all over again. I actually listened
for a season 8.
I listened to the last episode of No Encore, I guess as like revision before I came on today, the last one that I had guested on, mm-hmm. which was, or well, no, I don't know if it was the last one, but it was just one of them, whichever one came up first when I searched, and it was, we opened the show talking about The Simpsons that time.
Nice.
And I was reminiscing about a gag that I had seen just like the night previous where, I'm going to tell it again because even listening to it today cracked me
up. I can't remember, so you might as well.
Homer is like looking at a newspaper, he sees an ad for a free wig.
Yeah.
He like, and then he just goes, wow, free wig. And he imagines himself wearing a wig and it's like, and the wig is like Marge Simpson's hair. And he's looking at himself in the mirror. He's like, I love you, homie. And then he kind of comes out of his thought and he's like, hey, I don't need her at all anymore.
Fucking unbelievable. Unbelievable. Just so good. But we could crack Simpsons references all day. Instead, we're going to some tunes. Yeah. Well, I go first because it means that you get to finish. You could, like,
sure.
You get to put
the cherry
on
top. I've got a nice finisher.
Okay.
There's definitely going to be some overlap in this,
I feel. I will say off the top of the bat here, by the way, I did leave some very obvious ones out because one, potential for crossover, but also I wanted to pick some ones that maybe don't get enough love.
Yeah, me too.
I've got some big hitters, but there's definitely like some of the most obvious ones for me are not here, which does not mean that they're not amazing.
Yeah.
We can maybe review later on because I don't know what Mark's picked. He doesn't know what I picked.
Yes.
Here's one that I think is fucking amazing. And I went through a weird phase when I was living with Richard Chambers where I just kept singing it. And I think he sang a bit of it as well. Every night we just like pass each other hall and just like sing a bit of this. It's fucking great. One that I had no clue what this was about when I was a kid. And now when I'm older, I'm like, this is genius. Number 5 for me, please, Adam.
Hey, who left all this garbage on the steps of Congress?
I'm not garbage. I'm an amendment to be. Yes, an amendment to be. And I'm hoping that they'll ratify me. There's a lot of flag burners who have got too much freedom. I want to make it legal for policemen to beat them. Cause there's limits to our liberties. At least I hope and pray that there are. Cause those liberal freaks go too far.
But why can't we just make a law against flag burning?
Because that law would be unconstitutional. But if we change the Constitution,
then we could make all sorts of crazy laws.
Now you're catching on.
What the hell is this?
It's one of those campy 70s throwbacks that appeals to Generation Xers.
We need another Vietnam to thin out their ranks a little.
What if people say you're not good enough to be in the Constitution?
Then I'll crush all opposition to me, and I'll make Ted Kennedy pay. If he fights back, I'll say that he's gay.
Amendment, they ratified you. You're in the U.S. Constitution.
Oh, yeah. Doors open, boys.
Oh, wow.
Because those liberal freaks go too far. It's the amendment song.
So obscure.
A Memphis soul style parody of the Schoolhouse Rock song, I'm Just a Bill. They actually used the original singer from that song.
No way.
A guy called Jack Sheldon. It's on the episode The Day the Violence Died, and this is used as a replacement for Itchy and Scratchy on the Krusty the Clown Show in the episode, apparently, which also reminds me of one of the best gags of all time when like the Krusty the Clown Show loses the rights to Itchy and Scratchy for some reason.
Oh yeah.
And he's like, alright kids, it's time for Eastern Europe's favorite cat and mouse team, Worker and Parasite. And it's this absolutely insane clip. It's fucking amazing.
Yeah, another one that was totally lost on me as a kid.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I was just like, no, but this song, I swear to God, I don't know what it was about this, but like I just became obsessed with it a couple of years ago.
I picture you in the shower, like,
oh man, I'm not kidding. Last night I was brushing my teeth, right, and literally, I would walk around the house when I was living with Richard, and like I'd be like, I'd walk by him, and I'd be like, and I'm hoping that they'll ratify me. It's fucking amazing. It's so melodic and weird. The music is horrendous, and like that like horrible like guitar like solo at the end. It's gross. His voice is amazing. It's so funny. It works on so many layers. It's absolutely brilliant. The lyrics are absolutely incredible. I adore it. And it's just, yeah, it's stuck in my head forever. And I do remember as well when it was around this time a couple of years ago when, like, remember Pitchfork came along and they were like, hey, we're re-reviewing some old albums that we felt the scores were a bit off. Mm-hmm. And they were like, and now, you know, this album has this score. And I was like, on Twitter, I was like really annoyed about it. And I was like, you know, but if we change the Pitchfork rating system, then we can make all sorts of crazy reviews.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, I love this song. It needs more love. And yeah, it's just so much fun. It's so much fun. That's
it's
my number,
brilliant.
That's my number five.
Yeah, I didn't understand that one at all as a kid.
Wanna make it like, legal for policemen to beat them.
Oh, so good. Okay, complete change of tone now for my number five. This is another parody, not a parody of a specific song, but a parody of a character, a beloved character in children's literature and film. And this is just a beautifully sweet, yet, I don't know, dark interpretation of that character and that world. Okay, hit it.
Buy me a beer, $2 a glass. Come on, help me, I'm freezing my ass. Buy me brandy, a snifter of wine. Who am I kidding? I'll drink turpentine.
Move it, you drunk, or I'll blast your rear end.
I found $2.
Then come in, my friend.
And so let us leave on this heartwarming scene.
Can I be a booze hound?
Not till you're 15.
There's the emotional Homer Simpson that we know and love so, so dearly. Yeah, that was a booze hound named Barney from the Sherry Bobbins episode of The Simpsons, which is a kind of a parody of Mary Poppins. That was a booze hound named Barney, a song. A lot of the songs in The Simpsons are about beer. and I definitely have not finished including beer in my...
Good, because there's one gonna happen again that I'm expecting. So.
But I just think like it's just so sweet. Like that, like I don't know how they got away with these jokes, first of all, because it feels like nowadays you couldn't like encourage a 15-year-old to be an alcoholic on like a, you know, a show that airs at like 6 p.m. but like that stuff happens so much. The whole Sherry Bobbins thing, I didn't really like it that much as a kid, and as I've come back to it in recent years,
doesn't
I
she
see
get
that it's hilarious.
Sucked into a jet engine at the end when she's like flying?
Oh yeah, 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 that's right.
Yeah, it's actually
it's
really
a background
dark
gag. Yeah, it's so dark.
Like. Yeah, it's a really dark episode, which it doesn't really come across when you first see it as a child. You're just kind of like, oh, this is just like Mary
this
Bobbins.
Is Mary Poppins, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I love Barney so much as a character. Like, I love when they make Barney sensitive. Like his short film that he makes in the Film Fest episode.
Yeah,
like
it's
when
great.
When we see these like hidden depths.
Don't cry for me.
Yeah,
I'm already dead.
The rose.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about that one. But
yeah, no, it's a good one. Yeah, the Sherry Bobbins thing, it's darker than you anticipate when you're a child. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Right, number four for me actually kind of fits in. I mean, with the whole substance abuse situation that The Simpsons seems to lean into quite often.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go for number four, please. It's a jaunty trip. Let's hear it.
Kicking, a musical journey through the Betty Ford Center.
You know, when I was a girl, I always dreamed of being in a Broadway audience.
How do you find the defendant?
He's guilty of mayhem, exposure, indecent.
Freaked out behavior, both chronic and recent.
Drinking and driving, narcotics possession.
And that's just page one of his 10-page confession.
I should put you away where you can't kill or maim us, but this is L.A. and you're rich and famous.
I'm checking in.
He's checking in.
I'm checking in.
Checking in.
No more pills or alcohol. No more pot or Demerol. No more stinking fun at all. I'm checking in.
He's checking in. He's checking in.
No more looking pale and thin. No more bugs,
beneath your skin.
Hey, that's just my aspirin.
Chuck it out your check in.
When I grow up, I want to be in the Betty Ford Center.
Better start saving now. It's very expensive.
Shh, they're strapping down Liza Minnelli.
Amazing. That one also ends with Bart saying that he wants to be an addict when he grows up.
It's checking in from Kicking It, a musical journey through the Betty Ford Center that the family go and see when they're in New York in the episode.
If I could interrupt briefly, I'd like to think this is my influence here, that this has made it in, because it's so good. It's my favorite one of all time. And like when you mentioned it to me the first time, I was like, it's got to be checking in, right? I was like,
and I did say I was not going to include it. And then I had one, I will say, I was going to go with Under the Sea, but it's only two lines.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
That's the one where Homer is accused of sexual harassment. And it makes it to like television, and they're watching it in the house, and like they air like Mr. Simpson, no! And like, he's like, oh.
Sweet candy.
And he's just like, I brought the babies at her home. And then like, he goes, all right, Marge, kids, he's like, go upstairs and pack your things. We're going to start our new lives under the sea. And then it cuts to like the Little Mermaid whole thing where he eats all the, but the line when he goes, there'll be no accusations, just friendly crustaceans under the sea. And the best part is like, and goes back at the end, he's on the couch and he's like mid song, and like Marge just goes, Homer, that's your answer to everything, move under the sea, it's not gonna happen. Anyway, look, fucking this is from The City of New York versus Homer Simpson, which is a great episode.
Yes, Clangalash. Yes.
No bull, stick.
No Mountain Dew, only crab juice or Mountain Dew. I'll take crab juice.
The first time, oh man, this episode's gonna be unlistenable. The first time I saw that, I was fucking in bits. And that's also like when he's on the bus and he's like, ugh, and then he goes stretch his legs, and he's like, Marge, I can't feel my legs. And then she's like, Homer, those legs belong to the man behind you.
The big tall guy sitting behind him.
At the end when they're driving away and they've all had a great time except for Homer, who's had like the worst time of his life. And it's like, can we come back next time, Dad? And he's like, we'll see. And like a bag of like
garbage just
medical waste just burst in his face. They had to cut out the Twin Towers guy, they had to cut that out after.
Yeah, it didn't dare. But it didn't dare for years after 9/11. I remember just because I was so in sync like with like, they used to just show it season by season and on TV, and I'd be like, oh, it's coming up, and then it just wouldn't happen.
Is that the bit where he like has to go from one tower to the other?
Yeah,
to pee?
Yeah, yeah. Like one toilet. Yeah.
And there's like people shouting at each other from but the Clav Clash guy, oh my God, yeah.
There's tears in my face right now.
Yeah, stick. It's fucking unbelievable. And like just shoving in his face. Anyway, the musical bit here won an Annie Award for Outstanding Individual Achievement for Music in an Animated Television Production, and an Emmy Award for Outstanding Individual Achievement in Music and Lyrics in 1998. They say here that the titular character featured in the musical is most likely a direct reference parody of Julian Wells, played by Robert Downey Jr. in the film Less Than Zero, which is based on a novel by
Bret Easton Ellis.
Correct. That is correct.
Quiz.
That's my number four.
Yeah, that song has like, so they had Alf Clausen, again, the composer, had access to a full 35-piece orchestra for every episode.
That's incredible.
So like you can hear like, and that's such a big part of the sound of The Simpsons is like that orchestral. Yeah. Just there's all this like Dixieland jazz and like old kind of Broadway stuff going on.
Broadway's like that big band kind of feels like it just it's. You got all the horns, you got all the strings, you got all the like big drums, the timpani, like all of that stuff.
The stuff that like Family Guy just straight up ripped
off,
when it did the theme song. It's so good. It gives it such a unique signature as an animated series.
I will say, because Family Guy, I tapped out so much quicker than that than I did in The Simpsons, but I do remember loving the first three seasons on it for a time, and I thought it was genuinely hilarious.
Yeah.
But there is a great early Family Guy gag where it's like, it's like the Adult Entertainment Awards or something, and it's like, and the award, it's like the nominees for best, you know, original porn score are, and it's like Ron Jones, and it's like a guy in his room on like a bass guitar. It's like bum, 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 bum. And then it's like, you know, John Stevens, and there's another guy who's like, you know, there, and he's just like doing the same thing like with the keyboard, like these sleazy lads in like a CD room. Yeah. And it goes, and John Williams, and it cuts to John Williams, like of like Mad Star Orchestra. Wars and Indiana Jones, and it's like, and like this like fucking like 75. five people in an orchestra.
Amazing.
It's so good. Yeah.
Like Family Guy definitely had some good, had some great moments.
It did have its moments, sure, yeah.
For sure.
But anyway, that's my number four on the best Simpson songs list.
Nice one. Well, speaking of a great moment, here is an important moment for, I think, pretty early on in The Simpsons. This is in reference to something that was becoming a bit of a trend, I think, amongst celebrities in America at the time. And this, yeah, okay, I have no more to say in the preamble. Go for it.
I wanted to do something to help that boy, so I called my good friend Sting. He said, "Krusty, when do you need me?" I said, "Thursday." He said, "I'm busy Thursday." I said, "What about Friday?" He said, "Friday's worse than Thursday." Then he said, "How about Saturday?" I said, "Fine." True story.
There's a hole in my heart, as deep as a well, for that poor little boy who's stuck halfway to hell.
Though we can't get him out, we'll do the next best thing.
We'll go on TV and sing, sing, sing.
And we're sending our love down the well.
All the way down.
We're sending our love down the well.
Down that well.
Krusty, what are your plans for the royalties?
Well, we gotta pay for promotion, shipping, distribution. You know, those limos out back, they aren't free. Whatever's left, we throw down the well.
Oh, that's incredible. Absolutely incredible. Sending our love down the well.
Yes, sending our love down the well from the Timmy O'Toole Fell Down the Well episode, yeah, in which Bart drops a walkie-talkie down a well. Everyone in the town thinks that he pretends to be a little boy called Timmy O'Toole who's fallen down the well. It sort of captures the generosity and the spirit of everyone in the town. And I guess as a direct parody to what was happening with USA for Africa, with Stevie Wonder and Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie and all the guys doing, yeah, that big charity single.
And subject to
Band-Aid as well.
Subject, like, you know, to a documentary.
Well, this is why I wanted to put this song in, because, oh, yeah, I watched the documentary over the weekend.
The Greatest Night in Pop.
The Greatest, yeah, Night in Pop.
Yeah.
It is so much fun.
Okay.
It is such a great watch because, like, looking at, like, there's so many little micro moments that happen. Like, they've got, like Bob Dylan is, like, is on the brink of a panic attack for the entire recording session. And it's like an 8-hour recording session. It goes all through the night after a big award. Lionel Richie's hosting this big award ceremony in Los Angeles, the American Music Awards. Everyone, all the most famous people in America are in town that night. So they have to do it that night because it's the only time they're going to get everyone. Everyone's exhausted. Like, Lindsay Buckingham is out of his mind on coke.
Doesn't sound like Lindsay. What are you talking about?
And, like, he's only in it for like a split second, but his eyes are just like saucers. And it's so wild, like, to see the biggest stars in the world all just hanging out in a studio together recording through the night. Like, they recorded until like 8 a.m. They had to just go and go and go. And they were like doing, like, trying to get, like, you know, they wanted to get, like, everyone to do their parts in a circle and get it in one take. So it just goes, like, you know, it's almost like a game. Like, they're going along and, like, Stevie Wonder starts it and then Paul Simon jumps in and then Tina Turner jumps in and then, and, like, it gets to this guy. I don't really know who this guy is, but he keeps messing it up because he's drunk. So they just have to keep starting again and again and again. And then you've got, like, Huey Lewis, like, waiting for, like, the big kind of, like, Bono bit, like the big, oh, yeah, shouty emotional payoff bit. And he, like, never gets to do it because it just keeps, like, stopping before it gets to him. And I would encourage anyone who, like, just enjoys fly on the wall music documentaries to watch this thing. It is a riot. It's so entertaining.
I should as well note that, yeah, like, this is obviously a wonderful parody of that kind of thing and the Band-Aid thing. And, like, I love how in the moment you see them in the studio and, like, just little things like Krusty giving it socks the way he is there. Like, he's really going for those, yes, those individual bits. And, like, Rainier Wolfcastle, like, with his hand on the side of the headphones, like, yes, they're all sincere. But I love how, like, you know, it's just like the wide shot of all of them, and it's like Dr. Marvin Monroe, the Capital City goofball is there, yes, and they all have their hands, yeah, like around each other, and they're, like, doing, like, the kind of the big thing. It's incredible. Also, crossover collection. This is my number two. You've stolen my number two because this is in my top five in the silver medal spot. So, yeah. But I'm happy to share it with you, man, because it's an incredible, incredible one. Is it just me or does Sting sound a bit like Paul Noonan at the start of that bit? Like, am I
in many
wrong?
Ways, Paul Noonan is Ireland's
proto Sting, you know,
he's a very handsome man,
yep,
beloved by all. He just hasn't said as much problematic things, or you know, he's kept his integrity.
That's true. And also, welcome back to the World Houseplants, who put out a new song there, and they've announced some gigs.
Yeah,
all kinds of things
are
happening. They're back.
Nice. LCD.
No Pushover is the name of the song. It's really, really good.
Nice LCD vibe off it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, big time.
Cool video as well.
Yes, they're cooler than Sting. Let's be fair. And I love how in the world of The Simpsons that this song becomes a US number one hit, but only stays at the top for a week, drops down to 97 after the whole hoax is revealed. So yeah, it's great. I love that little Kent Brockman interview at the end there as well. What are you going to do with the money, Krusty? Well, you know, distribution and promotion and...
whatever is left, we just throw down the well.
All right. Number three for me then is this, which is, you know, an all-time classic.
Help, the human's about to escape.
Get your paws off me, you dirty ape!
He can talk.
He can talk, 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 he can talk.
I can sing!
Ooh, help me, Dr. Zaius.
Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Oh, Dr. Zaius.
Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius.
What's wrong with me?
I think you're crazy.
Want a second opinion?
You're also lazy.
Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Oh, Dr. Zaius.
Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius.
Can I play the piano anymore?
Of course you can.
Well, I couldn't before.
This play has everything.
I love legitimate theater.
Yes, it is Dr. Zaius from the Planet of the Apes parody musical with Troy McClure. Rest in peace, Phil Hartman, by the way. The greatest rest in power, Phil Hartman. Stop the Planet of the Apes, I Want to Get Off. And it is, of course, parodying the song Rock Me Amadeus by Falco.
Yes.
And I
which I've never heard. Like, like so many of the Simpsons parodies. Like, there's so many things that you like discover in The Simpsons and then find the original.
Find the real thing. Yeah,
I remember like the one, like there's so many great bits in that thing, but like I love the one shot of like one of the apes who like just starts breakdancing like in the middle of it. Like it's like interview piece I read in Vulture, they did like kind of an oral history of this whole bit, and like producers and writer Josh Weinstein and David X. Cohen were talking, and Josh Weinstein said, "We used to joke all the time about the song Rock Me Amadeus. It was a running joke in the early 90s among me and our friends who did news radio. Between the three of us, we'd constantly say things like, 'Thank you, Amadeus.' After we came with the idea of a Planet of the Apes musical, I said randomly, 'Thank you, Dr. Zaius.' Maybe someone else might have said it. I don't want to claim full credit for it, but someone said it like the Rock Me Amadeus song, and it clicked in, and people started pitching lyrics." David Cohen says it's his favorite part. You know, a lot going on, all fits together semi-perfectly or sort of. I'm just remembering how I giddily enjoyed the Dr. Zaius part when we were writing it. Josh Weinstein says, "I know David Cohen had one of the best Simpsons lines ever, which is, 'I hate every ape I see, from chimpan A to chimpanzee.'"
So good.
And David Cohen says, "No doubt I was going through the different types of apes in my mind, trying to think of a funny rhyming lyric. Probably I gave up on orangutan and moved on. I certainly didn't pitch it thinking it was a high point in the development of human or ape culture. My recollection is I thought it was pretty good and had a decent chance of going into the script, but it wasn't a sure thing." And that kind of speaks to my thing I always say about The Simpsons at the height of its powers. Think about the jokes that they threw out. Think about the writer's room.
Yeah.
And what ended up in the bin then. Man, the standards were so fucking high.
And it's the fact that it's the fact that every joke is immediately followed by an even superior joke.
Yeah.
Like they have this rule where it's like, you know, like it's like that improv comedy thing of just like, yeah, and then, like the, like that, can I asking the doctor, can I play the piano anymore? Or no, not the piano. What was it?
I want a second opinion.
Is it? What's wrong with me? I think you're crazy.
I want a second opinion.
You're also lazy. Yeah. Like that's so good. That's just so smart. Like it's so dumb, but like, just like, how do you think of that? You know, like it's brilliant. Like this, the attention to detail is just incredible. That's such a great song. I kind of had a feeling you'd pick it, so I didn't pick it.
I'm glad. Yeah. Because it was too heavyweight for me to leave out. I left out some heavyweight stuff. So.
Amazing. Amazing. Right. There's another great Planet of the Apes honorable mention, which is, I only watched a clip of it today, but it's Homer's like making a speech about something and he's like, Oh, he's going into space. He's going into space. And he's like, they're like, aren't you worried about being having no qualifications and getting sent into space? And he's like, I think it's going to be fine unless they send us to that planet of the apes. And then he goes, wait a minute.
Statue of Liberty?
That was our planet. You blew it up.
You maniacs.
See, it's all about, like, everything in it is a reference to media. And I guess it comes from a time where we've had more of a sort of a monoculture where everyone was watching the same stuff. Mm. I just don't think it can work anymore because we don't have those, like, moments where everyone is tuned into the television session. For my number three, here is another beautiful, melancholic song about beer.
Well, beer, we've had some great times. When I was 17, I drank some very good beer. I drank some very good beer I purchased with a fake ID. My name was Brian McGee. I stayed up listening to Queen. When I was 17.
Yes, Dave.
I think that I got my hand up. I'm delighted to pick this one because it just got bumped from my list today.
Great.
So I'm glad it made it in. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful moment. I think the underrated bit at the end is him as he's pouring the can into the sink and he's just shedding a tear.
Like, it's so sad.
Also, he's like, you know, a fake ID. My name was Brian McGee. And like the photo on the ID like, versus what he looks like is astonishing.
Completely different.
It's
amazing.
He's got like long hair. He's about like 55. It's fucking amazing. Why is he giving up beer again? Just to kind of a health kick, I guess.
I think it's a money thing, isn't it?
Okay.
They're going through really tight times financially. Maybe it's to pay for Lisa's horse or pony or something.
Maybe, yeah. It ends but he's just pouring the cans of Duff down the sink. Yeah, like, it's fucking miserable.
And it's obviously a parody of a very famous Frank Sinatra track called It Was a Very Good Year. And I actually was listening to that track earlier and looking at the YouTube comments because the melody is so nostalgic and so sad and so filled with like regret, memory and like reminiscence and regret. And like the top comment on the YouTube video for the Frank Sinatra one.
Oh, I can't wait for this.
Like, it's like...
I buried my father this morning.
It's very similar. Yeah. It's very similar. It's like, it's a man saying like, when I was 12 years old, my father took me for a drive in his pickup truck. This song came on and a single tear shed down his face. It played today on the radio and now I understand. I am 75 years old.
Oh my God, Jesus Christ. I love the YouTube comments so much. They're
the
best.
It's the most
earnest corner of the internet.
The second one is like...
Every song you can imagine. I guarantee if you go into Stained, it's been a while. It really will be like, me and the boys, we used to punk off school and listen to this. Last week, they brought two of those boys home in body bags. It's just like, what the fuck? Like, it's these insane turns.
Yeah. It's just so, so beautiful. Another one was like, you know, I understand this song more now than ever before. My wife is in heaven. I'm sure I'll be with her soon.
Oh,
you know, it's just like,
God.
Yeah, so like, but stunning. It's so beautiful. And I think Dan Castellaneta, I think I'm saying his name right there.
Castellaneta, maybe?
Castellaneta.
Yeah, it's one of those ones.
He's so good at putting him out. He's such a wonderful singer. He's like such a great singer, even when he's not AI. And he's so good at putting emotion into his performance. Like, you can really feel...
I stayed up listening to Queen.
Yeah. When I was 17.
I believe everything he says.
Yeah, it's such a perfect take. Like, it's gold. Liquid gold. Duff beer gold. It's fantastic. It's a really short track, but I love it so much. It makes me feel things. And
makes me feel feelings.
Yeah. Yeah, what about you, Dave? What's your number
two? Well, my number two was Sending Our Love Down the Well, so we're going to have to skip past that and I guess stay with you for
your number two. Cool. Well, I mean, I'd happily just listen to it again, but I feel like we're heading for a very long episode.
Ah, listen, it's all good.
Okay, cool. I'm going to jump straight back in then with another absolute classic. How do I tee this one up? This is from an episode in which the gang are parodying 101 Dalmatians. Here it is.
Some men hunt for sport, others hunt for food. The only thing I'm hunting for is an outfit that looks good. See, my
vest. See my vest, made from real gorilla chest. Feel this sweater, there's no better than authentic Irish setter. See this hat, 'twas my cat, my evening wear, vampire bat. These white slippers are albino, African endangered rhino. Grizzly bear underwear, turtle's necks, I've got my share. Beret of poodle on my noodle, it shall rest. Try my red robin suit, it comes one breast or two. See my vest, see my vest, see my vest.
Na na na, na na na, na na na.
Mark!
Sorry, you gotta admit it's catchy.
I think my favorite one, like, I'm not sure if it was in the clip there, but I love when he's like, see my loafers, former gophers. Yeah,
I know. I just felt bad putting in so many long clips because, like, in many cases, I'm putting in the entire track here. With that one, I just cut it down. But it really,
see my vest.
Yeah. Mr. See Burns. My vest. Mr. Burns talking about how he is taken in. What is it, 2 dozen and 1 Dalmatians? Like 25 Dalmatians?
Oh, greyhounds,
or greyhounds.
Isn't it?
Yeah, greyhounds.
Yeah,
sorry,
the racing dogs.
Yeah, Santa's Little Helper has given birth, or Santa's Little Helper's partner, spouse, has
it's
given
long-term
birth to
partner. 25. She's the fastest, she's called. Because remember,
she's the fastest.
It's
your well
race, and like, it's like, Marge is like, or Homer's like, Marge, we can't lose. He's conspiratorial. Yeah. He's like, Marge, we can't lose. He's like, look at the name of the horse I bet, or the dog I bet on.
Yes.
And then Marge's like, she's the fastest. Homer, I don't think that really mean. And it's like, and they're off. And she's the fastest, has taken an early lead here.
Always like, come second, is in second place. And struggling behind is in third. Like, you're lucky you're beautiful, Marge.
I love him so much.
He's wonderful. He's so wonderful. But yeah, so she's the fastest, has given birth to 25 little greyhounds, which Mr. Burns has taken in. And this is the moment at which we discover that Mr. Burns' plans for these 25 little greyhounds involve fashioning. What is it specifically that he wants to make out of the
greyhounds? Is it a
suit? Out of the greyhounds? A greyhound tuxedo would be best.
Yeah.
That's the bit that I cut out. Yeah, and it's just obviously, again, a parody of Be Our Guest from Beauty and the Beast. Like the animation in this sequence is unbelievable. Like the creativity of like how they, like, imagine what the animators had to deal with when they were given this. Like, we need a poodle beret.
Yeah.
We need like a suit made out of red robins. Yeah. We need a gorilla chest. We need a fucking turtleneck that's the size of a giant turtle. Like, it's just brilliant. And it sort of beat for beat matches a lot of the Beauty and the Beast like animation styles with like the big long corridors and the like fast panning shots and stuff. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. I love that little gag at the end as well when Bart's just like singing, na na na, na na na, na na.
Well, it's catchy.
A fantastic track. Like, I thought you might have this one.
Again, it was one of those ones where I was like, oh, you know, it's a given, you know?
Yeah,
and I was
it's up
a given.
There with the big ones.
Yeah, and I was like, you know, in fairness, again, this we say oftentimes with the top fives where it's like, look, you could fucking do this 5 times and still have a room for more. Like, it's just... I'm kind of going with what I'm feeling in the moment, you know.
I'm sorry,
but I wasn't not picking Amendment to be, you know, the amendment.
There's more to say about that one because it hasn't been done to death.
Exactly, yeah. And I want to show it some love, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that they'll write it for me.
Oh,
all right,
so good.
Number one for me. I think this is just a sweet little thing, and it comes at the end of one of the greatest episodes ever made. It's an absolute classic. It's beautiful, and it sums up just a masterpiece of television. So here's my number one Simpson song.
Well, Mr. Burns had done it. The power plant had won it, with Roger Clemens clucking all the while. Mike Socia's tragic illness made us smile, while Wade Boggs lay unconscious on the barroom tile. We're talking softball from Maine to San Diego. Talking softball, Mattingly and Canseco, Ken Griffey's grotesquely swollen jaw, Steve Sachs and his running with the law. We're talking Homer, Ozzie and the Straw. We're talking softball from Maine to San Diego. Talking softball, Mattingly and Canseco, Ken Griffey's grotesquely swollen jaw, Steve Sachs and his running with the law. We're talking Homer, Ozzie and the Straw.
It's just so beautiful, isn't it?
It's gorgeous.
The singer is Terry Cashman, who had he was born in 1941. He's still with us. I hope he's still with us as of the time this podcast comes out. American record producer and singer songwriter, best known for his 1981 hit "Talking Baseball." Mm-hmm. This is a parody, "Talking Softball."
Yeah.
"Talking Softball," and it's the same singer. He came in to do it. He did this, you know,
so cool.
Simpsons theme. So Homer at the Bat is the episode, the 17th episode of the third season, and it's incredible. It's the Springfield Nuclear Power Plant softball team led by Homer having a winning season, making the championship game, and then what does Mr. Burns do? Fires them all, brings in ringers, you know, real life baseball players like who do we have here? Roger Clemens, Wade Boggs, Ken Griffey Jr., Steve Sachs, Ozzie Smith, Jose Canseco, Don Mattingly, Daryl Strawberry, Mike Socia, absolutely incredible, all guest starring as themselves. And of course, they all meet with tragedy. one misfortune, fine. Two, yeah, whatever. He's like, but nine misfortunes. I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
And then, enough, they all get caught up in weird situations. Apparently, it says here most of the players were accommodating, except for Jose Canseco, who demanded that his part be rewritten. What a fucking ego!
What was his? Can you remember what was the sort of tragedy that befell him?
I can't remember him. I mean, the ones I remember the most are like there's Steve Sachs is my favorite one because it's like Steve Sachs, like
big jaw.
No, that's Ken Griffey Jr. He gets Ken Griffey Jr. I'm gonna try to remember these. Ken Griffey Jr. gets gigantism.
Yeah,
Roger Clemens turns into a chicken or something, like he's clucking. Don Mattingly, obviously, like he knows, like him and Mr. Burns having to scream about what sideburns are.
Yeah, that's my favorite one. I told you to get rid of those sideburns.
Mike Socia gets exposed to radiation, and that's the line you hear there where it's like Mike Socia's tragic illness made us all smile. Yeah. It's like, Jesus Christ. Jose Canseco might be the guy who goes into like, you know, a fortune teller booth or something, and he like ends up in some kind of weird vortex where he just goes into the abyss. Or maybe Jose Canseco's the guy who like helps a woman out of a burning house and he's constantly moving her stuff around. Daryl Strawberry develops depression. Like
is it literally just Bart and Lisa like jeering at him that sort of brings him down?
Daryl Strawberry. And he cries like, and then you have like Wade Boggs is knocked out by Barney because they get into a row about US presidents. But my favorite one is Steve Sachs. Because they're like, Steve Sachs and is running with the law. And it's Steve. So what's happening is Steve Sachs is driving and like he gets pulled over by like Wiggum's guys. What are they called?
Oh, because they're like a rival team, aren't
Lou?
They?
Lou is one of them.
And then the other guy, does he have Ernie?
But it's like the two cops and they pull him over and they're like, it's like, you know, you're driving around. And they're just like, you know, like, let's see your license. And he's just like, Steve Sachs in a New York City. And he's like, hey, I heard a guy got killed out in New York City.
Oh, yeah.
And they never found the guy who did it. And then like Steve Sachs goes, well, officer, there are like, you know, many
millions of people
unsolved murders. And he goes, you don't know when to stop talking, do you, sexy boy? And then like later on when Smithers is given the update of where everyone's at, he goes, Steve Sachs is on trial for like 700 murders. Or like, it's something mental like that.
It's Eddie is the other guy.
Lou and Eddie, it's great. It's an astonishing episode, and I find that song just really heartwarming. Like, it's just like a beautiful parody. It's a great little thing, and it bookends the episode perfectly. It's such a great, it's a classic, perfect, like, it's a perfect episode. Like, it's like everything in it works. It's still funny. It's great.
Yeah.
It's absolutely, it's just wonderful television. Like, it's so good.
And the fact that the gags are still delivering in the end credits, like, just shows you how much creativity was in that writer's room.
Yeah, and to bring it back as well, like, we were talking recently about, you know, recently, a few minutes ago on the show about like how The Simpsons has heart, and I mentioned the bit when Homer looks up at the stars for his mother. Like, I mean, first of all, that image, if I stop and I look at that image, I will start to cry. But like, an example of how The Simpsons knew what to do with its time so well, and like an end credits thing like this one. That scene where Homer's looking at the stars, of course, continues into the credits.
Mm,
they just played the music and keep the shot on him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is fucking lingers. Brutal. heartbreaking.
And you
so
see a little
perfect.
Like shooting star at one point.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And even like, you know, even that bit though, when like, when she goes away, like as devastating as that image is, and it's perfect, it's absolutely perfect. To me, that one image sums up Homer Simpson just more than words can.
Yeah.
But even just before it, they get a little bit extra in because it's like just before she goes to leave. He's like, don't forget me. And I'm like, oh God.
I got like shivers there. You can just think
of it.
I know.
So, he's like, don't forget me. And it's just like, oh no. You're like, it's, he doesn't deserve this.
And the score, like at every moment, because we're only talking about songs today, but like the scoring that's done throughout, like just at little moments. Like Mr. Burns has his own like Darth Vader style theme that plays every time he like walks into a room, you know?
Yeah.
like that there's a Treehouse of Horror specific motif that just comes and goes. I think they use like a theremin for that one. Like, like this Alf Clausen guy, man, he composed like all of these tracks. Like there's nothing the man can't do. And apparently he had like a week, like it's a bit like that like South Park production time thing. Like it's really, really tight. He had like a week to write and get a demo down of like every track, you know. Like it was like a track a week.
Imagine that was your job. Imagine you got to say that you were that guy.
I know. Imagine the pressure after.
The pressure is what I can think of.
You know, because it was like the most famous show in the world after like three seasons. And like to just continue delivering to that standard, and which he did for like, you know, another five.
Decades, yeah.
A theme tune everyone can hum, you know, like.
So good. Yeah, Danny Elfman, I think, too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
The only one that wasn't done by Alf Clausen. But yeah, and there's all these different interpretations of the end credits as well. And like, I guess honorable mentions time before I get to my number one. I want to say Flaming Moe's didn't make it in. We Do, which is just an incredible song. Like so good. I had to Google who Steve Guttenberg was today.
He's in a police academy, I believe.
Yeah, isn't he? Yeah.
The three men and a little lady guy. Yeah, yeah. That's what I know him from.
Who makes Steve Guttenberg a star? Yeah, it's so good.
So obscure. Anyway, for my number one, this is the one that, like yourself with Homer sitting on the front of the car looking up at the stars, this is the one that gives me the biggest emotional punch time after time after time. It is another tie-in with Mr. Frank Sinatra, patron saint of No Encore. And roll it, Adam.
Live from Springfield, the entertainment capital of the state, the Krusty Comeback Special.
Send in the clowns, those Daffy Laffy clowns. Send in those soulful and doleful schmaltz by the bowlful clowns. Send in the clowns.
They're already here. I love you, Krusty.
Quiet.
I got like goosebumps when Sideshow Mel pops up there.
It's just every time he shows up.
Unsung hero, like total unsung hero.
Yeah.
And by the way, for the record, this being number one means that I of course picked Monorail for number two. Don't be silly. It made the top five on a technicality.
Oh shit.
Monorail's in there, guys. Don't come at us.
Yeah,
it's all
we
good.
Didn't talk about Monorail. It's just too obvious, I
Again,
guess.
Again, it's kind of like it's the Urtext, as Craig would say, or something. You know?
Yeah.
It's just like
It often gets cited as like the best episode ever.
And
as well.
Astonishing. It's great, but it doesn't have the emotion of this though, would you say? Send in the clowns.
No. That gets me. I mean it's about like it's a reinterpretation, I suppose, of a song, Send in the Clowns. It's been covered by a bunch of different artists like Barbra Streisand, Frank Sinatra. Was written for a musical whose name escapes me at this point. Just a really, really gorgeous version of it. The vocal performances from like Krusty and Homer on these tracks, like there's the emotion in them is so real. You know what I mean? Like it's like you can hear him crying in the booth, you know, like where little caction is throughout there. Where he's like, send it the clowns.
The musical is called A Little Night Music.
A Little Night Music.
Yeah. From 1973.
Yeah. Like
it is wild as well how like, you know, it's one of those things where it stares you in the face to the point that they literally do it in the show when Homer becomes a clown and dresses up as Krusty. But like Homer and Krusty do have the exact same character model. It's just with green hair and the white skin and the red nose.
Oh yeah.
Apart from that, they have the exact same, they dishevel
him up a little bit, don't they?
They have like the exact same character model though. Yeah. It's insane. Like it's just
It's wild. I thought you were saying they had the same like personality, and I was like, "What are you talking about, man? Krusty's horrible." That's my number one. I just thought it would be a nice soft landing to bring us back down and make us feel emotional.
Great pick. Absolutely,
tuck us in at night, just like The Simpsons has done for me so many times.
Beautiful.
What a journey.
What a lovely thing to say. Speaking of journeys, if you want to, you know, support the show and take a journey
on our journey
to your wallet, you can do that and hit up patreon.com/noencore. Support the show. Get the episode a day early. Comes out on Thursdays. What's the story? I mean, while I have you here,
those,
I got
those limos outside. Don't pay for themselves.
We're going to pay the rest of it on the Patreon
for the distribution. I have to. While I have you here, I mean, I have to ask, like, what's your current musical journey? Are you able to tell us anything? And what's also, you know, like, sorry, we did speak to you, of course, for Enemies.
Yes,
we've talked about the gig since. Well,
yes.
We haven't talked to you about the gig since. You played in the Button Factory, coming back. It was our gig of the year, of course, on the New Encore NBA show.
Yeah, what an honor.
But let's talk. I mean, like, how are you feeling, man? I mean, how's
great.
It all been?
That was so, so good that night. That was, like, I think for all of us in the band, one of the best gigs we ever played. One of the most, some of the most fun we've ever had playing a gig. We fucking loved it. Like, we all went out for beers afterwards and we were just high, you know, like we had such a good time, and we went to London the following week and did another really great show over there. We sort of had a quiet couple of months there, just sort of like dealing with life, and we're sort of gearing up again now for a really awesome math rock festival that's happening in London in May. We're playing with Elephant Gym and Light and like a bunch of culty post-rock, math rock, amazing bands that we would have played with way, way back when in like different parts of Asia and stuff. So I'm really looking forward to picking up Enemies again. I think we're going to rehearse in 2 weeks and we're going to try our best to write some new material if we can carve out some time for it, because we're really, really hungry for that. And with Royal Yellow, I'm just back from a week in the Beekeepers, your beloved Beekeepers. I know you've frequented the spot yourself.
I went once.
Oh, I thought you'd been there a few times.
No. It's amazing. I loved it. Yeah, Dahi's a wonderful artist retreat. Yeah.
Place I also spent a bit of time and yeah, loved it there too.
I spent a nice tranquil week there recently. I wasn't making any music or anything. I was just lying around.
Yeah, I went down for a couple of days and wrote a bit of stuff, hung out with Dahi. And yeah, that's like the first proper stint of Royal Yellow writing that I've done in a while. And it was very fruitful, and I think that there's, I mean, you know, you don't want to jinx these things, but like, I feel like there's going to be a release of some sort this year.
All right. You heard
That's
it there,
my
guys.
Commitment on Mike.
If it doesn't happen, you know,
send in the clowns.
I can't top that. But a man who is by no means a clown.
I was wondering how you were going to tie that together. Like, since you said clowns, I was like, yeah, no, this could only go one way for me, really.
And much like, you know, a faithful institution like The Simpsons that's been kept going forever, this show would not be kept going forever if it wasn't for the wonderful panache and patience and love and joy on this Valentine's night, that is, of course, the man himself, Sonic Architect Adam, everybody.
Here, here.
It's great to be here. And, like, again, The Simpsons had such a chokehold on me in my childhood. Like, I loved it. And even if it was, all those jokes were flying over my head. In my early 20s, a friend of mine just happened to come across, by whatever means he came across them, like, seasons 1 to, like, 14. And myself and my housemate at the time, we had an in-house Netflix, because he built like a server on this old PC he used, so we were able to just like watch it on the TV, any of those episodes anytime. There'd be like many evenings where we'd just sit down with our dinner, myself and himself, and we'd just, you
amazing.
Know, we'd watch an episode of The Simpsons, and like watching it again with context is so good. Like it's so rewarding, and I haven't done it in a long time, so this has been a big inspiration to go back and listen, watch more episodes of The Simpsons.
And we'll be passing on those illicit details to the relevant authorities. Yeah. In the meantime, don't have a cow, man. My name is Dave Hanratty. This has been No Encore. There will be No Encore, and we're back next week. Much love. Bye bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.